One of the most basic and fundamental problems that we face as chiropractors is something that I like to call the chiropractic conundrum. And if you look up the definition of a conundrum, you find that it's a problem that is both difficult and intricate. But if you look at an alternative definition, you also find that it's a problem that can only be solved with conjecture. So what is conjecture? It's a guess. So we have a problem that is intricate and difficult that can only be solved with guesswork. That inspires a lot of confidence there, doesn't it? And that's why it's a conundrum, because no matter how much information we try to gather, it doesn't actually help, because we're left still with no other choice but to go with guesswork, and maybe we call it intuition, or maybe we call it something else. But the chiropractic conundrum goes something like this. You have a patient, and that patient has a problem. If you do something and you do the right thing, the patient gets better. But if you do something and you do the wrong thing, the patient gets worse. And if you do nothing, the patient might get better or they might get worse. So what do you do? And we like to think that the answer to this has to do with gathering information and all this kind of stuff. But in the end, that doesn't necessarily get us somewhere. I think that's why people struggle with this. Because one thing I've seen with younger doctors is they'll be with a patient and they don't know what to do. They've looked at the x-rays, they've scoped, they've palpated, they've done all that stuff. So it's not that they're forgetting anything. They've done it, and they've done it to the best of their ability. And maybe their ability is not 100%, but whose is? So they do it to the best of their ability, but they're still left. And it's probably not because they don't know, they haven't learned anything from their assessment. The reason why they don't know has a lot more to do with the fact that it's complicated. Again, it's difficult and it's intricate, but you're left then with that piece where at some point you have to make a guess. And this was something for me that when I was younger, it was really hard to do. I did not like to guess. So I wanted to keep searching until I had what I needed to make the assessment and to make a decision that I felt was based on fact and knowledge. The problem was I could be with that patient for 30 minutes and still not get there. And it was only over time that I realized that if I had been given an infinite amount of time, I still wouldn't get there. And that's because more information is not the solution to the problem. The problem is solved by taking a guess. And some people, just by personality, are extremely comfortable taking a guess and working on very little information. And those are the people, generally, who see higher volumes of patients. Why? Because they just go faster. Why do they go faster? Because they don't need as much information. So while somebody's still hunting for information, they've already made a guess and they're on their way. Other people need so much information that they can barely see three patients in a day. Well, isn't the solution somewhere between the two extremes? And so there's a point at which you have to be comfortable with taking a guess, but that doesn't mean you want to take a blind guess. Because truthfully, if we're going to just take a guess, well, then I don't need to look at x-rays and palpate and do all this other stuff, because what difference is it going to make anyway? Well, it does make a difference. It just doesn't give you absolute knowledge. And so there's a point at which you have to, for me, in my mind, I had to make a level of what I said was good enough. So working on no information is certainly not good enough. But I also know I'll never have perfect information. So I want to start with what is good enough. And good enough, I would say, is reasonable certainty. I would say anywhere between 50 to 80% certain is good enough. But I would like to get myself best I can to 50% certainty, because if I'm under 50, there's a really good chance the reason I'm confused is because I'm missing something. Because that's the other caveat that enters the equation, is sometimes we're really comfortable with our assessment and we're really comfortable with what we think is going on, and it doesn't change the fact that we're still wrong. And that happens. That happens to everybody. It happens to the best of us. It happens still. But that's even with doing everything you need to do, it still happens. If you're shortcutting and going fast, then it's going to happen even more. And so sometimes the learning process is cut short if you're going too fast. And so that's that delicate balance of what amount is just right. And I don't think there's an absolute, but that's why I give you a zone, 50 to 80% certainty. When I feel extremely confident that I know exactly what's happening, I'm still probably only about 80% certain. And when I'm really uncertain, I'm like, man, I really don't know, I'm still probably about 50% certain. I don't like to work at 50 and 80%. Well, I like to work at 80%, but I don't like to work at 50%. But sometimes that's the best you can get. Sometimes as you've done everything you can do, you're only at 50 and you realize, give me all the time in the world, I'm still only going to be at 50. So now I need to rely on intuition. So let's talk about that a little bit, because intuition is a very interesting thing. I had an employee one time who was a massage therapist. And she said to me, she said, you have very good intuition with your hands. You feel stuff and you know what's happening. She said, I want to have that. How do I get that? And my response to her was, I said, you just have to do a lot of it. Because I said, what you think is intuition is that when she says intuition, she's thinking I have some kind of a natural inborn gift. Absolutely not true. I was a terrible palpator when I started, so absolutely not true. But by practice and just doing it over and over and over, intuition in the end is basically the subconscious, or maybe we didn't say superconscious, conglomeration of all of your experience and knowledge that you've gathered while working. And so as you're palpating people and adjusting people and you're going through the process, it simply needs the ingredient of time and repetition, and you will develop an intuition. And so when you see somebody with a strong intuition, it's certainly not because they were born that way. Really, in anything, they weren't born that way. It's from study, it's from practice, it's from repetition. And so the more we do this, the better we get at that stuff. And so the intuition kicks in, and you feel more comfortable working at that 50 to 60% level, because you know that even when you may not feel mentally certain, there comes a point where you really just start to trust yourself that your intuition knows. And you don't even know how you know, but you know that you've done it long enough, and you've done it well enough long enough, that you start to just trust your body and go, I don't know why I think this, but I'm going to go with it. And then it works out, and you don't know how you knew. And that's something that comes only with time and lots and lots of repetition. So when we're trying to get to the point where we're able to make an assessment and move on, it's certainly a major handicap if you find yourself stuck and unable to move on with the patient because you don't know what you should do. And you get yourself in this mental conundrum where you're saying, well, I want to do this, but I don't know if that's the right thing. And what if it's the wrong thing? And, well, maybe I'll just do nothing. But nothing's probably the wrong thing, because they've already had nothing and nothing didn't work. So we need to do something. But what do we do? And you could just spin yourself into this giant loop where you become almost unable to function, essentially. And so for anybody who finds themselves going there, because I know it happens, when you get yourself in that kind of a funk, it's necessary to recognize that this is a conundrum. It is both intricate and it is both difficult, but at some point you're going to have to take your best guess and go with it. And I do believe that if you'll start taking your best guess and going with it, you'll find that your best guess gets a whole lot better. And so when you are like, well, I think the subluxation's here, go with it, but be very quick to assess the results of what you did. Know if you made the patient better, know if you made the patient worse, and get really good at correcting things when you're off by a level or two. That's something that I think what I noticed as a student is that the difference between the people who had been doing it a while and were really good, and then somebody like me who was a student and wasn't very good at all, is that if I adjusted a patient and that patient got worse, I didn't know what to do. Whereas if somebody with experience adjusted a patient and that patient got worse, they would look at, how did you get worse? What was the change that occurred? From that change, they could infer what must have just happened. They then knew what to do. And the very next adjustment would be fantastic and might even fix the patient's problem that they've been having for years. So two shots isn't bad. For me, I'm lost. I might be getting even worse. I might be going totally the wrong direction. And so I realized that the skill I needed to develop was not to avoid making mistakes, because that's pretty much impossible for human beings. But what I needed to do is get better at reading the consequences of my mistakes so that I could fix it on the very next try. And that is a valuable skill that probably is a seminar unto itself, just to look at, well, when you go from this to this, what does that mean happen? And just being able to really read the consequences of a poor adjustment, because whether we like it or not, we're all going to do it from time to time. And there's a number of reasons why we might give a poor adjustment. Not just because we adjust the wrong level, because you may only be off by one. But truthfully, sometimes being off by one is worse than being off by a bunch. Because if you're off by one and you actually create greater posteriority in the one that's causing all the trouble, that patient's going to get a lot worse. If you're off by three or four, it may not have any consequence at all. So in some regards, being close is almost worse. But you get better at figuring out, based on the consequences, man, I missed. And I've had ones where I could have sworn I knew where it was. I adjusted them. They got worse. Them getting worse told me where the problem was. And even after their body told me what the problem was, I still didn't believe it. But I adjusted it anyway. And then they got better. And even after they got better, I still didn't believe it. Because I was like, I don't understand how that could have been the solution the whole time. And so another part of it is letting the body tell you and trusting their body when it tells you where the problem is. And so really the amount of information you get from the patient, but that again becomes a subconscious thing where you start reading the patient and don't even know you're doing it. You're reading how their body's reacting and don't even know you're doing it. It just becomes, you just become one with the patient. And I think to me as a student, when I saw that was the level that I saw that I said, that's what mastery looks like. That's something I absolutely believe Gonstead did in spades. Even though I never met him, I was only 3 when he died, so I never met him. But when I've seen it in others, I've seen others who are alive today and practicing, and that's when I go, oh, that's mastery, is when they are so in tune with the patient that when something goes wrong or something unexpected happens, because that's the other side. Doesn't necessarily mean you did something wrong. Sometimes the unexpected happens. Sometimes in making the right adjustment, you uncover something much worse that their body's been hiding. And as soon as you make the correct adjustment that they needed at that moment, that something else that's been hiding under the surface comes rearing up and becomes a huge problem. And so the patient may interpret that as though you made me worse because now my symptoms are worse. And so a question I often ask is, are your symptoms different? Not better or worse, because that's a quantification that the patient truly is not qualified to make. That doesn't mean they don't want to. But they're not really qualified to tell you if it's better or worse. What they can tell you is that it's different, which might mean it's more intense. It might mean it's moved. It might mean something entirely different. That's what I want to know, because that's what you're trying to read, is the difference in symptoms. Because if symptoms simply become more intense, then you probably did the right thing in the wrong way. But when symptoms change entirely, that means it's now coming from somewhere else. And you very well might have done the right thing, but it needed to be done in order to get to the deeper thing. And so it's really hard sometimes to not judge yourself and not judge what's happening. But over time, I've come to understand this. And it could be hard when I make an adjustment on a patient and now their symptoms change and are more intense. And in their mind, they're worse. And in my mind, they're better. And how do I convey that to them? Because I'm almost excited. So I'm like, yes, we're getting to it. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm so much worse. No, you're not. You're different. Well, I feel worse, but I think you're different. And so it's just this weird conglomeration of symptoms that how they perceive it and how I perceive it is going to be different. And I'm outside the emotion of the fact that I don't actually feel the pain. I just know it's there. And I've got to be a little more indifferent to it as I read it. The patient gets sucked up in the fact that they're feeling it. And that's going to make a big difference on how they interpret what they're feeling and where they go from there. So I think that this conundrum that we get is kind of a big deal, because it's fundamental with every single patient we see. Every single time you see a patient, you have to make a decision to do something or to do nothing. And then once you make a decision to do something, you then have to make a decision about what something to do. And that is the essence of what we do at its foundational level. Everything else we do flows down from that first thought. And so every patient encounter you have involves the chiropractic conundrum. And it involves that thought process of, what do I do and how do I do it? And am I doing the right thing? And always in the back of your mind is the, am I doing the right thing? There are times when a really bad subluxation that really needs to move, you can feel their body's very defensive and protecting it. And you say to yourself, well, I know this is it. I know I need to do this. But what if I miss? They're going to have pain with no relief. What if I miss? And that what if I miss thought starts to get in your head and really mess with you. And then there's the, but what if I do it? What if it's huge? And what if they feel worse? And so all these what if questions come up. And the answer is you cannot answer those what if questions. You just have to have enough certainty that you're willing to go for it. Because if you don't go for it with 100%, I can guarantee you that outcome will be poor. So the only way to get a good outcome is to really be committed. And so when I would go through this process, even to this day, I will keep hunting until I have enough certainty that I can go for it. As long as I'm not sure that I'm confident enough to give it 100%, I'm going to keep hunting. But once I'm sure enough that I'm willing to give it 100%, whether that takes me 1 second or 10 minutes, whatever, there's no time limit, whatever it takes. Once I know that I can be 100% committed to this solution, then I'm ready to go. And if I feel in myself anything less than 100% commitment, then I go, well, I need to look a little further to see if maybe I'm missing something, because something in my intuition is telling me that I shouldn't be as certain as I am. And so that's the battle between the mental and the subconscious. And we have both, and they're both good at chiropractic, but they don't always agree. And so it's tough to get those worked out with each other. There's also another aspect of this conundrum, and this aspect relates a little more to students. So now I've given you the complicated in-office version. Let me give you the version that has to do with students. And that is what happens when, as a student, your adjusting is not what you want it to be. And so you say to yourself, I should change something. And then if you're like me, what you would do is you would then go and change everything, and it still wouldn't work. And you wouldn't even know, you wouldn't know what to do from there, because you changed everything. So you don't know why it doesn't work, because, and you don't have any part that does work because you changed everything. And so one of the big things about that part of the conundrum is to have a little more of a system to making changes. And I think that the more detailed you are in your setups, like for me, I remember the first time I read a book by John Wooden. And John Wooden's almost pretty much before my time. So he's probably before most people's time who's listening to this. John Wooden was a basketball coach at UCLA that like won the national championship every year all the time. And it almost made the thing boring because he won so much. And it didn't matter what players he had, he still won. And he was a great coach, is what it came down to. John Wooden was a great coach. And in his later years, he wrote some books, and other people wrote books with him. And they talked about his coaching strategy. And one of those books is his Pyramid for Success, and it's great. But one of the stories about John Wooden is that when he would start with his teams every year, because, of course, in college basketball, you don't have paid players who will be here year after year. You have players moving on, so you're always getting a new crew. So you can't assume that they know anything. So what he would always do is he would start by teaching them how to put on their socks. And that seems kind of, I don't know, demeaning, I guess, maybe patronizing, but that's not why he did it. The reason why he taught them how to put on their socks correctly is because he recognized that when players didn't put on their socks correctly, they got blisters. And players with bad blisters couldn't play basketball. And players that couldn't play basketball weren't much use to his team. So what he wanted to do was teach them how to put on their socks correctly so they wouldn't get blisters. And lo and behold, his teams did not have trouble with blisters. And they also avoided a lot of other problems because all of their footwear and all of their socks were done the way they should be. And so when you think about something that fundamental, that almost like insulting, and yet it might have actually been one of the secrets of his success, was teaching them how to put on their socks correctly. And so when I do things like, I started this with myself, cervical chair is a good example. With cervical chair, the very first thing I look at is foot placement, my foot placement. And I want it to be repeatable, and I want it to do it the same way every time. And my reason for doing it is that if I anchor my foot to the foot post of the chair, and I know where the chair is in relationship to my foot, I avoid the temptation of moving my upper body and changing my angle on the patient. Because as soon as I have to reposition myself and balance myself, and I move my foot away from the post of the chair, I know I've just moved, and that's no good. I'm unanchored. I got to get back on. And so when you're trying to make changes in how you adjust, I think it's good to think about every detail of your setup, from where you place your foot to where you feel the chair against you, to all of these things before you've even set up on the patient. Most people start with the setup, and there's probably three or four things that you could be mindful of before you even make contact with the patient, before you even touch them. And so the more details you have that you know about, then when you want to make changes, you can easily make changes in just one of those things, and you keep all the others the same. And that's going to give you the best chance of actually getting better. And I did not get better until I started doing that. As long as I was haphazard, didn't want to take the time to think about all the details and changing everything every time something didn't work, I was going nowhere. But once I started getting more of a system and being more disciplined in how I practiced, disciplined practice is what makes the difference. Simply going through the motions won't do it, but more disciplined practice, almost like having it, you can almost make yourself your own checklist, like a pilot would use for takeoff, and be like, first I do this, then I do this, then I do this, and start checking it. And those things, when you do it enough, will become a habit. That habit becomes so natural that there comes a point where if you don't do something, you immediately feel it and you know it. At this point, when I set up on a cervical, when I make contact and I'm ready to thrust, if I haven't done all of my checkpoints, I can feel them. I could have my eyes closed and I know that I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I'll feel it and I'll look and go, oh, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And I'll move myself before I make the thrust. I can catch myself really quickly. But that comes from doing it repeatedly the same way so many times. Otherwise, if you're always doing it differently, your body doesn't pick up on those subtle cues and it won't even let you know that you've maybe drifted around the corner or you're getting too far in front of the patient or you're crowding them out or you're letting them fall too far back. You start to lose the sensation of those things if you aren't doing it the same way every single time. So that's the conundrum for the student, is making changes in your adjusting technique and doing it in a way that you're actually making yourself better and not screwing yourself up. Because if it's not working, you probably need to change something, but you definitely don't need to change everything. You just need to change one thing and have it be controlled and see how it works. And then little by little, you can have people come in and coach you. Although that is an entirely different story, because if every time you have trouble, you have a different person tell you how to fix it, I can promise you, you will not get better. And I hate to say that, but it's true, because getting a piece from this person, a piece from that person, a piece from somebody else, that might seem like a nice idea, just hybrid it, and I'm going to get everybody's best qualities. Well, you don't know that you're going to get everybody's best qualities. You might get everybody's worst qualities. And so the way to really learn is to learn from a person. Learn what they do. And then when you've learned to do it like that person, then go learn to do it from another person and then another person. And then you have the skill set where you can start to gain some adaptability, some diversity to what you do, and be able to do things a little bit differently. But trying to learn several different ways simultaneously when you don't even know one way is a absolute sure recipe for disaster and failure. So I very much caution against that, but proceed at your own caution if you choose to do that. So I hope you found this helpful, and I know it might be a little depressing to think about, but it really is, the conundrum is at the base of everything that we do. And so I don't think it's good to avoid it. I think it's good to think about it, to recognize it, and on each patient, be aware that you are making a decision every time and you want to make the best decision, but don't let that decision so overwhelm you that you can't make a decision. Because in the end, the trick is going to be that just knowing that to some degree, you're going to have to make a guess. And so you need to become comfortable with that little bit of uncertainty. It's not a blind guess. It's not a 0% certainty guess, but there's going to be a little bit of guesswork and you're going to go with your best intuition and your best guess based on what you know. So I hope that helps you today.